This podcast is brought to you by LMU Munich.
In Hermione, on the southeastern coast of the Argolid, there was a sanctuary dedicated to Demeter Chthonia on the side of Mount Plum. Pausanias says a great deal about the strange and specific festival that occurred there during the summer, and his account hints at some underworldly connotations that the site might have. And in this paper, I am going to explore one particular aspect of this cult. Pausanias singles out the sanctuary of Demeter Chthonia and Hermione as being, quote, most worthy of mention. In rapid succession, he gives two foundation stories for the cult. The first is the Hermionian version of that the sanctuary was founded by Cleomenes and Chthonia, children of the hero king Phronius, the first inhabitant of the Argolid. Although simple and without significant detail, this etiology incorporates aspects of the cult we find corroborated in other evidence, including the special involvement of a Chthonia, connected to Demeter's epithet here, and Clymenos, who, as I will discuss, is a proxy for Hades. The connection to Argive or Tocthony provided by the cult's foundation at the hands of the children of Phronerus lends authority to the cult that perhaps would not otherwise exist, though this is kind of speculative on my part. But Pausanias quickly moves on to the second Argive version. This is narrated in greater detail than the first, giving the impression that Pausanias believes it to be the more likely candidate. It goes, Demeter travelled to the Argolid and was received by two local men, but a third man, Colontus, did not pay respects to her. Actions which his daughter, Chthonia, was openly disdainful of. Angered, Demeter burned Colontus alive in his home, but she saved his reverend daughter, who was transported to Hermione, where she established the sanctuary honouring Demeter. So the cult of Demeter Chthonia and Hermione, along with the goddess herself and the annual summer festival that commemorated her, was named after one of these two mortal Chthonias. Pausanias doesn't explicitly comment on the underworld aspects of the cult, which are implied by both the epithet and the landscape surrounding the sanctuary, which I'll discuss in a moment. Overlooking these aspects removes a lot of the underworld-related agency from his etiology of the name and explanation for the cult, even though this is at odds with his own extended treatment of the festival and with other evidence for the cult. Pausanias' story cannot escape the underworld aspect, even if he does not directly acknowledge it. But I feel that it's my duty to remind you that, as usual, we have to take Pausanias with a healthy measure of scepticism. I also want to point out here that this work, and my more extended work on this site, is based on an attempt to piece together the bits of this cult both through and unthrough Pausanias. And this will hopefully be satisfactorily presented in my upcoming When I Finish It book. But at this point, I'm still working out some of the kinks. So please do suggest or question my interpretation as you see fit. But to be clear, I'm beginning with the premise that, not proposed by me in any sense, that this cult is some kind of mystery cult. If there are mystery rites here, I think it's clear that they are underworld related in some way, which is interesting in and of itself, not counting the odd Orphic tablets. I think this would represent the first genuinely eschatological mystery cult. I'm happy to discuss this more over questions or coffee. Pausanias's discussion of the physical appearance of the sanctuary is limited, but he reports a temple facade featuring statues of priestesses and seats inside the temple for the elderly women involved during the unusual festival sacrifice. He says that the main object of devotion was unknown and that the form of the statue was kept hidden by these elderly priestesses. Sorry, not sure what my computer just did there. There are other places where Demeter had a hidden cult statue, including in the relatively close sanctuary in the Ark of Corinth. Pausanias spends most of his discussion on the summertime festival called, fittingly, the Chthonia. It includes a procession that appears to have been open participation. It was led by priests and magistrates who were followed by citizen men and women. Within the procession was a group of children dressed in white and wearing wreaths of woven flowers, which the locals called cosmodalon, and which Pausanias equates with hyacinths or maybe irises. This may be an important point, which I will return to at the end. These were described with I, an exclamation of grief or a mark of mourning. The procession itself was followed by a group of men who led four untamed cows bound together by ropes. One by one, the cows were unbound, allowed to rush into the temple and locked inside. There, four elderly priestesses waited, ready to catch each cow and slit its throat with a sickle. In turn, as each cow was let into the temple, the priestesses had to ensure that it fell on the same side of the priestess as the first had done. At least that's how I sort of interpret fall on the same side, as in if the first falls to the left-hand side of the priestess, each cow must fall to the left-hand side. I'm happy for anybody who has a different interpretation of fall on the same side to let me know what you think is going on with cows falling on the same side. That may appear a minor point, but it is something I've spent a very long time thinking about. The sacrifice is clearly meant to be, or at least appear to be, subversive. It's performed in secret by elderly women with a sickle inside the darkened and closed off recesses of the temple, and the animals must be made to perform uniformly in death. Sickles are not found anywhere else in connection with sacrificial slaughter, so this is clearly meant to be a deviation from some kind of normal practice. I think we can safely assume that Pausanias didn't speak with anyone who'd actually witnessed the sacrifice, so the sickle might represent his attempt to increase the strangeness of the act, or if not Pausanias's attempt, then the person Pausanias is speaking to. If there is some desire to make this a complete other, then this might just be an added layer on. Twice, Pausanias uses the term katagrasmadai, which usually means like work upon or cultivate, and so has these kind of agrarian connotations, again reinforced by the sickle, which is a decidedly agrarian implement. He uses the term on only three other occasions, each time discussing a particularly brutal killing of humans, not animals. And it's not used to describe sacrifice anywhere else in the extant corpus of Greek sources that I have come across. If you have found it, please tell me. I would really love to know. Pausanias, at least, thought this sacrifice was particularly brutal, and using this term emphasises the violence inherent in the act, so much more than just saying slaughtered or sacrificed, although he does use these more generic kind of ritual sacrifice terms in the description. His stress on the brutality of the ritual reinforces its status as transgressive in relation to other kinds of sacrifice, both within his own work and elsewhere. From the festival, Pausanias moves to the landscape surrounding the sanctuary of Demeter Chthonia, where there are several underworld-related features. Behind the sanctuary are three places, each surrounded by a stone wall, places. These are named after Clymenos, Pluton, and the Acousian Lake. In Clymenos's place, there's a large chasm in the earth, which is reportedly where Heracles dragged Cerberus up from the underworld. This unprecedentedly easy access pushes to the underworld, that is, pushes the Harmonian landscape into a liminal space between the mortal world and the underworld. Opposite the sanctuary is a temple dedicated to Clymenos, who Pausanias calls King Under the Ground. He tells us that Clymenos is a surname for the underworld king. In other words, this is a proxy for Hades. This obviously reinforces the link between Demeter Chthonia, the underworld, and the foundation of the cult in several prominent ways. The connection is most apparent in the family links echoed in the local mythology of Chthonia and Clymenos, and more pan-Hellenized Olympian mythology, that is, Chthonia as Clymenos' sister as Demeter is Hades' sister. Hades is also Demeter's son-in-law, and Clymenos is, elsewhere, described as the husband of Demeter Chthonia's daughter, alternatively Kore and Persephone. I'll discuss that in a moment, though it has caused me more than one sleepless night. Aileen gives an account that corroborates some of the details on the sacrifice. I've given the short passage in full on the handout. Oh, I've also given a large chunk of the Pausanias, so you can have a look at that if you are inclined to read Pausanias. So I won't read the whole thing out here, but the story we get is not at all like the subversive, violent, hidden sacrifice of Pausanias. And it's internally contradictory, which points to a conflation of several sources. He tells us that the largest cattle are sacrificed, that they are apparently willing to submit to the sacrifice. In the account, a single bull is sacrificed, although he agrees on the peaceful submission of the sacrificial animal. That's not exactly ground-shatteringly unique. Peaceful submission of sacrificial animals is all over the shop. There are some hints of Pausanias' very detailed narrative here too, including notably the elderly women, though here only one, but leaving out the subversion. There's some other evidence, which I'm kind of going to quickly run through. A mention of Demeter Chthonia in Euripides' Heracles, composed around 416 BCE. In this, Heracles and his father are discussing the hero's capture of Cerberus. Heracles' dad says, "Where did you leave Cerberus?" And Heracles says that the grove of the Chthonian goddess and the city of Hermione have him now. Both Euripides and Pausanias situate Cerberus' capture behind the grove, in the grove behind the temple of Demeter Chthonia in Hermione. Strabo also talks about it, but doesn't connect the association between Hermione and the underworld with Heracles' final labour. But he does say that the Hermionians never buried their were never buried with coins. They don't need to pay for the boat because they're so close to the underworld anyway. The idea in cults that people were actually buried with coins in any kind of early period is up for debate. So I'm not really sure where to slot that in, I suspect much later, i.e. in Strabo's own time. There's little reason to think that this doesn't share, that Strabo doesn't share some common heritage with Pausanias's and Euripides's accounts. So Euripides' version of Cerberus's capture and the close connection between Hermione and the underworld can serve to geographically contextualize these later comments. And Heracles, of course, has strong mythic connections with the Eleusinian mysteries. He's perhaps the most famous mythic initiate of Eleusis, and this might play on the connection between two mystery cults of Demeter. Perhaps more interestingly, the 6th century poet Lassus, who was from Hermione, this is on your handout on page 2, gives some further information in a fragment that's probably from a hymn written in honour of Demeter. "I sing of Demeter and Kore, wife of Clymenos, raised the honey-voiced hymn in deep-sounding Aeolian harmony." There's some I won't go into that, actually. Athenaeus quotes the passage twice, and he describes it as a portion of a hymn dedicated to Hermione and Demeter that may have been performed at the Chthonia. The Clymenos described by Pausanias fits the profile of this earlier characterization of the hero and Kore's husband, not just the infamous Hades, but the underworld god directly assimilated with the indigenous hero. This forges a more meaningful link between Demeter Chthonia and Clymenos in Hermione, particularly if the hymn was written for or performed at the festival, which, sadly, we shall probably never know, as many things. The link between Clymenos, Hades, Demeter and Persephone Kore is supported both by elements of the festival and later Hellenistic and early imperial inscriptions from the site, which are dedicated jointly to the trio. A late 3rd or early 2nd century BCE inscription contains an agreement between Hermione and Asine regarding the arrival of ambassadors to perform the sacrifice at the Chthonia. This probably refers to the city founded in 700 BCE on the Messenian Gulf with refugees from the Argolid. The opening lines of the inscription specifically mention a cow, and this could refer to the provision of one of the special sacrificial animals for the cult's festival. By this time, the Chthonia had clearly become a draw for foreigners, and the inscription specifically mentions renewals of kingship and kinship and friendship and hospitality and various things that you tend to find in these kinds of friendship-affirming treatises. There's not much archaeological evidence. There's not been significant excavation work done at Hermione. There was a brief excavation conducted in 1909, which wasn't published. The town is the subject of a currently ongoing project run by the Swedish Institute at Athens. And they have posited that the sanctuary of Demeter Chthonia is underneath the modern city's main church, so probably unlikely to be excavated anytime soon. This is mainly due to dedicatory inscriptions to Demeter that have been found in and around that area. It's also worth noting that inscriptions relating to the cult of Demeter, and there are, Pausanias mentions a bunch of them in passing. So inscriptions for Demeter, dedicated to Demeter, have been found throughout the city. And as yet, there is no archaeological evidence for the supplementary landscape, including other buildings or purpose-built pits or holes or anything like that, that is described by Pausanias. If the Chthonia festival was or had an initiatory element, then we have no way of knowing what it might have entailed, obviously. The inclusion of mystery rites in the cult might account for the strong foreign interest in the cult and the growth in the popularity of the festival during the Hellenistic period. The most notable evidence for this is the local Argolid version of Persephone's abduction and its association with the cult of Demeter Chthonia. This includes Pseudo-Apollodorus's claim that the Hermionians told Demeter about Persephone's abduction, which is corroborated by Pausanias, by Pausanias's earlier account of the local Argives assisting in Demeter's search for her daughter. Pausanias's narrative of the cult's establishment in which Colontus is burned alive while his daughter Chthonia is saved presents a kind of inverted, attempted immortalization of Demophoon from the Homeric hymn to Demeter. Most obviously, Colontus's fiery death, contrasted with Demophoon's nightly burning, illustrates Demeter's complex approach to fertility and barrenness, to life and death. Chthonia's own quasi-immortalization in the name of the festival and the cultic epithet of the goddess echoes Demophoon's similarly quasi-immortalization through the establishment of annual rites in his honour. The sanctuary at Hermione is topographically suitable for a reenactment of Demeter's search for Persephone, something like the sacred drama that might have been performed during initiation rituals at Eleusis, though I think it probably goes without saying that these are all very theoretical models of the reconstructions of these cults, so I don't kind of want to put my hat too firmly in one basket or another. The place of Pluton might have served a similar function to the Eleusinian Plutonian, although the Plutonian at Eleusis is not the place where Hades abducted Persephone, nor was it considered to be a passage between the mortal world and the underworld. The danger in this interpretation is, of course, that we risk reading too much of Eleusis into the Hermionian cult. This is especially important regarding Colontus's death. There not only is there no evidence for a link between Colontus and his daughter, Cophonia, and Demophoon in any sense, but there's no particular importance placed upon the death. Pausanias doesn't dwell on it in any way. Both of the foundation stories Pausanias presents are clearly mythologized accounts, and in the first version, in which Colontus's death does not feature, has a greater likelihood of local belief due to the prominence of Clymenos in other supplementary evidence. More substantially, perhaps, there are several 4th and 3rd century name lists from the area which could represent lists of initiates. The lists contain names of individuals either alone or followed by a patronymic or matronymic, and these could be lists of men and women who have undergone initiation here. One of the lists includes the line Etus Ectu Clunoso, indicating that this particular list might be the people who were initiated in the 6th year of the service of the priest Clunoso, who was the eponymous priest of Demeter. Although the list contains around 500 names, a fairly considerable number for Hermione alone to have provided to the cult as initiates. On the other hand, we might expect supplemental information if the names list foreigners. This is not a feature of the extant lists as it is for extant lists of initiates from other places. Initiate names appear frequently in inscriptions, but the closest parallel to these name lists are probably the initiate lists in connection with the Samothracian mysteries. Many of these lists group initiates by their place of origin. There are some that don't include ethnicity, but not really in large enough numbers to say that it's a feature. The extant lists also indicate what level of initiation each individual has achieved, and again, that's not a feature of the Hermionian lists. It's certainly likely that the lists at Hermione indicate initiates. It's easy to speculate why ethnicity might not be included. Any kind of speculation would obviously be just that, speculative. And it's just as easy to imagine that they might be lists of something else, of names related to other things. One 3rd century literary source emphasises the mystic aspect of the cult. A fragment of a poem written by Ophilochus of Corsica, which might actually be the beginning of a hymn to Demeter, and I've given you the opening lines. Though this is, though it's fragmentary, it is quite big. Both the mystic rites belonging to Demeter Cophonia and the gifts of Persephone and Clymenos. The fragment expresses a strong connection between Demeter Cophonia, Clymenos, and Persephone, rather than Corre, as we find elsewhere in literature about this relationship, and which causes me grief. This provides a bridge between Lassus's earlier account and Pausanias's later one. While the short section I've quoted corroborates the nature of the Hermionian cult, there is little in the remainder of the quite substantial fragment that suggests the hymn refers to Hermione, either specifically to the cult of Demeter Cophonia or to the cultic landscape more generally. There might be a connection between the fragment's contents and Attica, which is referenced alongside Attic Deems. So there's no conclusive link to either Hermione or Attica within the fragment, but it certainly does suggest some Eleusinian mystery style activity. Chris Brown's analysis of the highly fragmentary opening reveals that the hymn might include a story involving Persephone, Hades, Demeter's search for her missing daughter, the barrenness being cast across the earth, all the kinds of things that we expect in an Eleusinian hymn to Demeter style construction, but could equally work in a Hermionian context. The next part of the fragment is much better preserved and directly references a narrative in Demeter's establishment of the Eleusinian mysteries. So, to start wrapping up, the Hermionian cult of Demeter Cophania is primarily fleshed out by Pausanias, and his account gives a sense of the relationship of the sacred landscape to the underworld, even if he does not emphasise the connection. This is confirmed by supplementary epigraphic and literary evidence, although there's no other evidence for the form of the festival that Pausanias has clearly gone to great lengths to narrate and to emphasise the transgressive nature of the festival and in particular of the sacrifice. The brief mention of the sacrifice in Aelian confirms how far out of his way Pausanias goes to stress this point. Pausanias also reports that Pluton descended into the underworld after Kore's abduction at nearby Lerna, and there were Demetrian mysteries performed there. He mentions a grave in Hermione, which is the site of Demetrian mysteries, which I'll come back to that. Although that ritual isn't directly connected to the Cophania festival or cult. It does show that there were Demetrian mystery rites performed at Hermione, which is in itself problematic for the cult of Demeter Cophania being a mystery cult. The procession and festival of Demeter Cophania evoke some elements of Persephone's abduction narrative. The hyacinth garlands worn by processing children pick up on Persephone's act of picking flowers. Hyacinths are mentioned twice in the Homeric hymn to Demeter. The first is immediately prior to Persephone's abduction, and the hyacinth is included in a list of flowers being picked by the goddess and the Oceanids. There is an established trope of girls being abducted while picking flowers, of which Persephone is the most famous. So the hyacinth-like quality of the flowers worn by these children perhaps evokes the flower-picking scene of Persephone's abduction. Persephone features obviously in some of the supplementary evidence for the cult, particularly as the wife of the king of the underworld in whichever guise he is presented. There's one primary case for arguing that there's no connection between the cult here and that of Eleusis, which is the overtly eschatological nature of the cult in Hermione. The Eleusinian mysteries are focused on the agricultural associations of Demeter and Kore. Individual worshippers might have considered their own privilege in the afterlife, but the main reasons for initiation were certainly not eschatological. The primary purpose was, in my opinion, to form and maintain a close relationship with Demeter and Persephone in order to receive their gifts in life, i.e. Agrarian benefits, making sure that you have continued food supply. That's not to say that there are not mystery cults or mystery-like cults that have inherently eschatological functions. The most obvious example would be the so-called Orphic gold tablets. The primary piece of evidence for mystery rites being held here are the name lists, which bear a resemblance to name lists found in initiation contexts elsewhere. The only piece of evidence that directly suggests a mystery cult is the opening of Philicus's hymn to Demeter. It's just as likely that the hymn refers to Eleusis and not Hermione. Pausanias does not mention that there were mystery rites performed in this cult, but does mention a site elsewhere in Hermione where mysteries of Demeter were performed. With the lack of concrete evidence and Pausanias's assertion that there were mystery rites being performed in honour of Demeter elsewhere in the city, I think we have to conclude that in all likelihood there aren't mystery rites being performed at the cult of Demeter Chthonia in Hermione. And there's one huge reason for this, which I haven't really gone into here because it's sort of just emerging from the fog of my thinking about this in various ways, which is why I want to present all of this information to you. There's no reason for people, locals and particularly foreigners, to want to undertake eschatologically related initiation in a cult primarily dedicated to Demeter, a goddess who, in her agrarian aspects, is giving and loving and kind, but in her more maligned aspects, that is, her aspects related to the underworld, is cruel and unforgiving and selfish. Given that there is another cult of Demeter in the area that Pausanias mentions as a mystery cult, and probably, I think, an agrarian-related mystery cult, there just isn't a reason to think that people would intentionally align themselves with a goddess who shows no indication of giving anything back to them in any concrete way. So please hit me with your interpretations. Thank you.